On October 18, 2011, the Bloomsburg Daily was present for the first public conversation held after the September 2011 flood. Join us as we listen to Mayor Dan Knorr address the roughly 80 people in the audience, the additional 70 on our own live internet stream, and the over 250 following our live blog.
All right, good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming tonight. I really appreciate the time that you're giving us and spending on this. There's a couple people that first I want to introduce from the town. We have Chief Bob Ruff at the fire department, Chief Sokolowski with our police department, our emergency management coordinator, Joe Wondolowski, our sergeant with Sergeant Resnick with the Pennsylvania State Police. In the back, we have town administrator Carol Moss, and we also have Superintendent of Public Works, John Barton. Our code enforcement officer could not be here tonight, but he also submitted some information. The first thing is there's a couple reasons why we wanted to have this tonight. In the midst of our emergency management during this event, we're in a lot of places and we have obviously a lot of things going on. It's tough for us to get a sense, a perspective of how things are going from the street level, from the residence level, the constituent level. So one of the things that we wanted tonight is to get a sense of what that was like. We're sort of in the fog of the emergency, and I think it's healthy, it's good for us as the municipal government to get that sense. We also know that the danger of flooding for our town didn't go away when the water receded. And God forbid we have another event similar to this, or even of a lesser magnitude, while we're serving our terms, we certainly want to learn the lessons and get the perspective of how we handled things, what we did right, what we did wrong, what we could have done better. But I think most importantly, when we look at the last time we had a comparable event to this flood, certainly 2006 was bad, but really you have to go back to 72. And so you're looking at a four-decade stretch between when we had an event of this magnitude and when this happened. And 4 decades from now, we certainly won't have the same council. We'll have new people in emergency management. It's critical that we not rely on memory, on word of mouth, for that type of an emergency. Because if it's 4 decades from now, we're going to need to have everything compiled, have this written, memorialized, so that the people that are in the government in emergency management at that time can look at it. I want to be on a golf course somewhere retired, so I don't want anybody calling asking me questions 40 years from now. So that's some of the purposes of this tonight, is to get this down and understand. So before we get to the feedback from your perspective on our emergency management, I want to take you through what that actually was, what it was that we did throughout the emergency, what, from our side, it entailed. And then you'll have a good idea, an overview of what the town did, and hopefully then we can have some feedback. We certainly, council and myself, we certainly don't mind discussing things with you, but if you don't hear too much from us, don't think it's because we're not important, we don't think it's important, but really the purpose is for us to get from you on the minutes. It's going to take us time over the coming weeks and months to really look at this and see how we can incorporate it for our plans moving forward. So first, just what set up this disaster? It's being known as the Hurricane Lee disaster, but really there were 3 storms that contributed to the water table getting to where it was, to the level getting to where it was at. Irene, Katia, and Lee, and of course Lee was sort of the knockout punch for us. The date where our emergency started was Wednesday the 7th. We knew, even looking at the extended forecast the weekend before and the 3rd and 4th, we knew we were getting a lot of rain. But Wednesday was really the date where, for the first time, we knew we were in some trouble. The National Weather Center predicted not only the record rainfall, but we also started to get the predictions of the Susquehanna River cresting and flooding at 33 feet on Friday. So that's not a fun moment to you know, realize that this prediction is the highest prediction if it comes to pass. Columbia County Commissioners signed an emergency management declaration that day. Very shortly after they did that, we got council together to do an emergency declaration for the town of Bloomsburg. At the same time, just some of those early things on Wednesday, Old Burke Road was closed pretty quickly. The Susquehanna River was at 14 feet, 5 feet below flood stage, and we had to monitor Fishing Creek. Part of the thing that makes it tough emergency management-wise is that we know things are going to get bad in a very short amount of time, 48 hours from now. But if you're looking at the river, 14 feet, 5 feet below flood stage, we have to get the word out that this is coming, because in 2 days, that's going to come over the bank, and Fishing Creek happens before the river. So at that time, the Red Cross shelter was opened. The county animal rescue team set up at the university, and we began to stand by with gear, fuel, and provisions all on Wednesday. Industry notification is critical at this point in the disaster. You need as much time as possible, and unfortunately, even with 2 days, it's not a lot of time, given the equipment, given the manpower that you have. But nonetheless, a mass email was sent to those industries in low-lying areas to prepare for the flooding. Our town EMC and our chief went personally to our three major industries to speak with plant officials on Wednesday evening as we started to realize the severity of what was coming our way. We activated our siren, and I believe this is the first disaster we used the siren in. This is our voice siren. This is not a drill. Those residents of Bloomsburg and Fernville are being advised to evacuate. This is the first time we used that siren, and I know in some areas it worked, in some it was a little tough to hear. And we started to implement what our state of emergency does in the town of Bloomsburg. That ended up remaining into effect until the 19th. There's a couple people who served us. The biggest name is our emergency management coordinator, Joe Wondolowski. He was instrumental, really, in managing this emergency. And as I start, I just wanted to note, his help, both our fire chief and our police chief, our ambulance workers, so many people that have helped. And then after the event, John Barton during the event and his team and our administration really stepped up. But Joe's sort of our point man when it comes to these emergencies. He's the one that we handle the minute or hand off the minute by minute control to. This is sort of hard to see, but I want to run through as quickly as I can. A lot of this was happening very fast, and one of the first things that happened is that town hall lost power, telephone, our emergency generator failed when our basement filled with water. So our control center for the police department went down very early in this, and that made it certainly difficult. We were able to move our operations to the DUI center. We also had a mobile unit outside the town hall for a while because people still went there expecting to get answers, so we had to set up a mobile unit. That was a challenge on top of what we already had. So there you see they moved to 8th and Catherine Street. Right away, we knew we had to start deploying porta-potties to be deployed and drinking water. We also, the fire department became a rally for the Pennsylvania National Guard. They arrived at 5 a.m. on the 8th, on Thursday the 8th. We really knew on Wednesday that we were going to need some help, and we were early in getting that help, thankfully, with the help of the Pennsylvania National Guard. We adjusted shifts to 12-hour shifts to the police. The state police helped supplement with troopers per shift through the end of the week on the 16th. The public works and the town fuel pumps were surrounded by water. That was another thing that just added a whole other layer to this. So we had to pretty quickly work out a deal with Wise and work to get fuel from a different source that was still accessible, since ours, which are almost always accessible, were not in this event. We deployed more porta potties, and started to release media reports. We got police from South Center, Danville, Bucknell University, and Bloomsburg University. And after the event, immediately afterward, our code enforcement department started to work with PP&L. As power came back on, they needed to ensure that it was safe power. And we, of course, continue to have meetings every day with the university, Public Works, County EMA, PPL, United Water, Fire National Guard, PEMA, and FEMA, and other governments surrounding us. This is the mobile command post that we had to position outside of Town Hall when our police department went down, when our generators failed. And then this is the incident command post, not right in front of the screen, but back a little ways at the fire department. The Susquehanna finally did crest on Friday the 9th at 32.75 feet, several inches higher than in 1904 and 1972. And you can see some of the five, sorry about that, you can see the top five historical crests. You know, we definitely topped the charts with this one. And again, our emergency siren system was utilized on the 8th and 9th as we were leading up to the crest, and we had officers driving through each zoned area. When we have an event like this, we cordon off the town into different zones to, depending on the severity of what we expect them to be affected by. It just helps us with the management of evacuating the town. We can do it by zone. We don't have to, you know, you can just quickly say what zones need to be evacuated and what zones don't. And again, just some news releases through the entire event. As much as we could, broadcast, you know, printed media, and the WHLM during the event was really, really instrumental in making sure they were running through the whole thing. You know, of course, not to come down on the press enterprise, but during something like this, they can do a good summary of what happened the day before, but when things are changing hour by hour, radio was really instrumental. The ammonia leak added an entire layer of complexity to this that we hadn't anticipated, and when we're doing emergency planning, you know, this is the type of thing that it's not easy to predict. And what happened here is on Saturday, very early, 1:30 a.m., Windsor Foods at 595 West 11th leaked ammonia used in the food preservation of their products. That leak forced the evacuation of residents within 1,000 feet, and it remained closed to residents through Sunday, the 11th. And a lot of that was areas that weren't affected by water but still had to be evacuated, just sort of adding further stress. And ammonia used commercially is androgynous ammonia. We knew this was a very dangerous gas. We were really concerned, and that's why, even though we weren't sure how much had leaked, we wanted to make sure the evacuation area was great enough that nobody was in danger. And at that time, we were a little worried. We weren't sure exactly what was leaking, whether it was the entire tank. It ended up being a coil, a refrigerant coil, a much smaller leak. So one of the things that made it hard was that the leak itself was pretty quickly covered by water. And that was a mixed blessing. On the one hand, ammonia homogenizes in water, and so during the time that it was covered by water, we didn't have to worry about it leaking into the atmosphere because we knew it was dissipating into the water. Our concern during that time was trying to find out if it was still leaking, because once the water receded, if it was still leaking and if there was still ammonia left either in the tank or in the coil, that was going to start to go back into the atmosphere. So that's why we kept the evacuated area of people out of there for so long, because we had to make sure after the water receded that that ammonia wasn't still leaking so that we could get a team in there to repair it. And we had to move the shelter as well because of the ammonia leak. Again, just another layer that you have your shelter set up, you have a place where people can go, and then in the middle of the night, you know, you have this ammonia leak and the shelter ends up being in the area that needs to be evacuated. So that was from my point of view, and I'm sure the chief's, early Saturday morning was really sort of the low point for us, where you know, you just feel like you got the water at its height, you have this ammonia leak, and then all your emergency preparations you know, your town hall's down, your fire hall's underwater, and now you have to move the emergency shelter too. Thankfully, we had a lot of people rise to the challenge, and Berwick School District was great in letting us relocate the shelter there. And, you know, added difficulties, but we got through it that day. And Windsor Foods, of course, was helpful as well, and we were able to make sure that leak was contained. It was a lot smaller, thankfully, than we thought it was, because it wasn't the entire 20,000-pound tank. It was just a refrigerant coil coming out of the tank. And we didn't have any reports from anybody that was adversely affected from the leak. So that was resolved again. Fire and chemical response teams were able to enter Windsor Foods on Sunday the 11th when the floodwaters finally receded. When the waters rose, this was the findings. When the waters rose, the tank containing the ammonia became buoyant and broke the supply feed into the coil that discharged the ammonia, and it emptied the tank. Just one of those situations where, thank God for the flooding, it allowed that ammonia to dissipate and not into the atmosphere. And this is Windsor Foods, where the ammonia leak occurred. The National Guard, again, we had requested on Wednesday the 7th. We knew pretty early on that our manpower was not going to be sufficient to get us through this, and that we really needed the National Guard. Our state and federal representatives, from Senator Casey to Congressman Barletta, really, really pushed to get us a mission approved. There's a process we have to go through to get the Pennsylvania National Guard here. They arrived on Thursday at 0500 hours, and they were just, it was instrumental. We needed them so badly, and they really took a lot of strain off of our guys. And they patrolled and maintained security zones throughout the entire duration, not only of the emergency, but in the time afterwards. We had National Guard trucks and helicopters that rescued many people who didn't evacuate their homes. We had police that rode with National Guard during rescue, and we had fire personnel using boats to perform over 30 rescues as well. Utilities were obviously obviously a difficulty. The flooding itself forced the evacuation of a third of our town. Bloomsburg University closed and sent their students home. That was, Dr. Soltz was helpful throughout the entire thing to make sure that, you know, we have 10,000 students now, and that is just something that we do not need during an event like this. We need to get the students out of here. They have homes they can go to. Get as many off campus as possible, since we don't have utilities, we don't have water. And he saw pretty immediately that as much as you want to have classes, it just wasn't going to happen. So we got them out of here. We did have a few hundred that stayed during the event. Either they didn't have a place to go or this was home. And, of course, as we all know, they helped out a lot in the aftermath. The majority of Bloomsburg lost PCL power, phones, cable, and water. And, again, this is where the radio really was helpful in getting the word out. United Water of Pennsylvania, Bloomsburg lost water from the 8th through the 12th. We had a boil advisory through the 18th. We had 20,000 people affected by that loss of water through United Water. And Columbia County EMA's phone lines, which are through Frontier, Frontier phone lines went down. So the county emergency management site that we rely on, that we point people to, the phone lines that we point people to, they were lost right away at the beginning of the flood. And that's certainly, again, another lesson that going forward we have to meet. Wednesday the 7th, again, National Guard, we had dumpsters, bottled water, porta potties, and we were ready to deploy them when the water crested and started to recede. Our roadways, of course, Interstate I-80 was closed in both directions. The East Bloom Bridge was closed. US 11 and West Main Street in both directions were closed until the 15th. O'Burke Road was closed for the duration, and Millville Road was closed and only opened on the 27th. So we had a lot of inroads and outroads from Bloomsburg that we just had to close. There was no way to make it work. And the fair, of course, was canceled for the first time in its history. The Department of Environment, after the event, sprayed for bugs on 919. We also had the Department of Agriculture in town after the event. to inspect food since there was no water. We still had several restaurants open to help make sure that, you know, we didn't make what was already a bad situation worse. We had a lot of political leaders that helped us. Senator Bob Casey, you know, was in constant contact with me and his office was here, and he came. Senator John Gordner was really great throughout the duration, and also Congressman Barletta. It's good during something like this. I mean, we have obviously a really politically charged atmosphere in our country, but it all tends to just fall away during something like this. And we had, you know, these gentlemen. You know, I can't tell you, it's one of those things where somebody like Senator Casey maybe can't physically do that much in Bloomsburg. He's obviously not here. But for us, when we're in the middle of something like that where you feel like, you know, it's all falling apart around you, you know, to have your senator call your cell just to say, hey, is everything good? Do you need anything? Is there anything I can do? It really was it lifted the spirits and helped us know that we weren't forgotten in the grand scheme of things. Our employees, I mean, I can't say enough. All our employees worked incredibly hard, but we had five in particular that worked despite the fact that they were affected by the flood. They sort of put their personal lives to the side and helped the town. Sean Hill and Elise Hughes and Randy Fetterman and John Barton and Bob Rupp all lost personal belongings. And one of those lost his home. Two lost their homes. So, you know, despite those personal effects, they still, you know, came to work, and that's just something amazing, because most of the rest of us, you know, we could sort of hunker down, didn't have to go to work, and could deal with our own issues, and these people did. At the end of the day, to me, what was the most important thing, as bad as this was, we had no deaths or serious injuries. You know, all the work sort of becomes worth it for that. As bad as things are and as hopeless and overwhelming as it seemed, you know, we can rebuild things, but, you know, the town, we can't help bring back a life. So that was a huge success for us. The aftermath for the town is that our recycling center, airport, and wastewater treatment plant and fire department were all flooded. So the town as a property owner was heavily affected as well. These are just some of the organizations. There's just, you know, so many to thank, but just an idea. I mean, from Agape and the Red Cross and the University, Salvation Army, our services, I mean, there are just so many that really rose to help. You know, the government can do a lot, but there's some of those things that we can't do or that we're not good at. And that's where these organizations really fill the gaps. We also did a late night business restriction after things started to come back to normal. We didn't want to go from completely closed to completely open and back to normal. We wanted to have sort of a middle period, a buffer period. And so we ordered that any restaurants or bars closed at midnight, not at the normal 2 a.m. And that just helped us with manpower be able to keep control a little better. Probably the biggest issue we had was we did have, you know, people that attempted to loot. Early on, people had the perception that, oh, things that are, like the graphics, things that are out on the sidewalk or out on the curb, it's free game. And, you know, we pretty early on tried to make it clear that was not the case. We considered everything property as people were sorting them out until that was in the dumpster and until it was thrown away. So we had to pretty early on, our police officers and the National Guard had to come down on looting. But we got it under control, and I think for the most part it was a success. Again, a lot of partners that helped us through this, you know, and continue to. Too many to name, really. Some more. And again, our Public Works Department just really went above and beyond, especially considering that their building, too, was underwater. And code enforcement is one of those, it's not as seen, because it's not during the event, it's after the event. But I know we had a tough period there for a few days where people got their power back on and they're happy and they're back into their houses. But code has the tough job of going in and making sure, yeah, you're back in or yeah, your power's back on, but we want to make sure it's safe. And unfortunately, sometimes it's not safe and we have to take people back out of their houses or we have to shut their power off until we can get a new breaker in there. That's not a fun job. And I can tell you, I certainly had calls. From our perspective, you know, by the time the water receded, we still hadn't had any deaths or serious injuries, and I sure as hell wasn't going to have any after the event. So we did not hold back from having code keep people out of their homes or pull people out or shut down the power if we didn't feel it was safe. So they did a great job, and it's a thankless job a lot of times. Agape, I mean, and the Red Cross, there's not enough that can be said about them. These are the type of things that in emergency planning, you can't necessarily plan on people's charity. But in a community that we have, in the kind of culture that we have here, they go above and beyond what we could ever do as a government. And the churches that make up Agape and the people that make it up and the people of the Red Cross and everybody that helped, that's the type of things that it's just there. It's just inherent in the type of people we are and in our town. And we couldn't have had the recovery we did without that. And the university, again, the students just working and working and working, using their energy and their youth to help us dig out. The fire department was instrumental, despite, again, just like Public Works, being underwater and having to move their operations to the YMCA. And there's the fire station. So to emphasize, you know, when our planning revolves around incident command posts and where we're all going to be, and then when that is affected, that is really another challenge. But despite that, the department was able to come through for all of us. And police, again, our mobile command post, because their station was down, and 12-hour shifts. I mean, they looked like zombies, but they were happy to do it. And a lot of our partners, people that they don't even realize come into it. I mean, the Attorney General's office that we had to be in communication with afterwards because you have people trying to take advantage of victims and scams, and we have to help understand what's legitimate and what's not. And then I'm not going to go through these, but just to give you a sense of the contacts we have to have and the people that through an event we have to keep in constant communication with. There's a couple pages of contacts from organizations that we have to coordinate with through our emergency management process. And not only for us, but for the town. That's sort of an idea of our... As far as the town goes, what makes this job a little more difficult is not only am I thinking in terms of emergency management for everybody else, but I'm also thinking of what's essentially the business that I've been elected to protect. And our business is the town of Bloomsburg. As far as our outlay, this number is outdated. It's closer to $500,000 right now. But we spent about $500,000 on the emergencies. Most of that was debris removal, landfill costs. We had a lot of overtime, of course. And now we have repairs to our buildings, which we're just getting a sense of. So right now we're at about $500,000. This is as of 9/28. I expect we have some more to come in yet. And then the high school as well, you know, working with cause at the high school to deal with that situation, which is still ongoing as they come back. There's our recycling center and the Bloomsburg Airport, just devastated. The wastewater treatment plant, which is underwater, I guess if you use a filter if you're in Danville. And Public Works Public Works Building is also a thing. So the town itself, not only were we trying to manage the emergency throughout town, but we were really debilitated in all our departments.
There's your car in the left corner.
Oh, yeah. So I'm I think Public Works, there's no way this is going to get that high. So I moved my car from 11th Street to right here. And so I had to hitch rides through the entire, because I was thinking I need my car for this emergency. I got to be able to get around. Well, that didn't happen. Some of our employees were offering to help me out, depending on the contract terms and the negotiations. So we had some fun with that, but they helped me out. Thank you to the chief for getting a lot of this together. So right now, that's really everything I have as far as the town's point of view. We have a lot of people here, and I'm trying to think if you have something that you want to give us some feedback. We're taking minutes. We're recording it. We have, we're recording a video. We have guys that are helping us make sure that we're going to have all this on the record. Take a minute or two. If somebody's already said something you were planning to say, maybe don't duplicate it. But this is what we're looking for. We want to know of all this stuff I presented. You know, what worked and what didn't. You know, what do you think we could have done a little better? So right now, I'll open it up, and if you have something to say, I guess, you know, either raise your hand. That might be the best way to go.